Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve.
I don't think he looks anything like me. But am I wrong, or did his mustache totally change in the middle of that video? I'm pretty sure. Hey, today we are starting a new series, and yes, we are going to talk about money, but not like that, I promise. Even still, you might ask, why? Why do we have to talk about money? Because of our hearts. A series on money might not feel spiritual, but it is. It is about our hearts. And that's not what I think. That's what God thinks. In fact, this may surprise you. God talks more about money in the Bible than any other topic. And it's because he cares about our hearts. He knows that there is no better indicator of where our hearts are truly at than how we think about and how we spend our money. Jesus said in Matthew 6:21, he said, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." God knows that money and how we think about it, how we use it, may be the most spiritual thing about us. You know, we say at Verve that we want to be about loving God, loving people, and turning the world upside down. And God says, if you want to love him and love people and turn the world upside down, man, there may be no better way to change than how you think about and spend your money. And so as we do this series, I just want to be clear, Jacob said this earlier, like, I don't want anything from you. I want something for you. I want us to be people who love God and love people more and more. I want us to grow spiritually, and money is all about love. It's all about our hearts. It's an inside job. So I'll start with a story. When a new church gets started in America, it's called a church plant. The idea is you start this new church to reach out to people who aren't already going to church. And to start a new church, you need money to pay for the facilities and the staff and ministries. And so you raise that money from existing churches. Typically, an existing church will give a church plant money for 3 to 5 years. And they stop after that time because there's this expectation that the new church's offerings will then pay for everything. And that usually does work, because even though the church plant was started to reach people who don't go to church, most new churches actually almost exclusively reach people who do go to church and are just kind of transferring from another church. And those people tend to come in as givers, and so the offerings quickly go up. When a new church gets started outside of America, it's called a mission. It's like a missionary, right? And the idea is, to start the mission, you need to reach people. You want to reach people who are not currently going to church. To start a mission, you need money, and so you raise it from existing churches. But existing churches will usually support a mission forever. There's no expectation that the mission's offerings will ever pay for everything. And because most missions truly do reach people who are not already Christians, not already going to church, so they don't come in as givers and offerings don't go up. So when we started Verve, we had this big church that supported us for 3 years, and then they stopped because we're in America, and that's what you do with an American church plant. You stop. But a couple years later, after they stopped, I got a phone call one day. And it was a friend of mine who is a pastor on that staff. And he said, "Vince, I want you to apply to us as a foreign mission. Apply for support, financial support, as a foreign mission." And I said, Las Vegas is different, but it is in America. Check your map. We're not a foreign mission. He said, "Yeah, but you are more like a foreign mission than you are an American church plant." I said, "Well, why do you say that?" He said, "Well, is it still true that 70% of the people who come to Verve were not already Christians and not going to another church when they first came?" I said, "Yeah, that's still true." He said, "Is it still true that your offerings don't pay for your bills and that your staff has to raise their support?" I said, "Well, they have to raise part of their salary." "That's true." He said, "Vince, have you gotten paid yet?" I said, "Well, yeah, I get paid, but not from Verve's offerings. I have to raise all of my salary." He said, "Vince, that's a foreign mission. Apply as a foreign mission." I was like, okay. And so it felt totally stupid, but we applied to this church as a foreign mission. They had two of their leaders come, and they sat in our services, and they talked to us, and they asked for all of our books. They looked at all of our finances from day one to that point, and we had meetings. And then I got another phone call. It was from the person in charge of making the decision of whether they would support us or not. And he said, "Vince, everything looks great. We just have one question." And I'll tell you the rest of that story later. Today, we're going to be in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 in the Bible. If you don't own a Bible, we give them out for free at the Velcro Bar, which is our connecting place. We'd love to give you a free Bible. We just love giving those out. And so we're going to put all the Bible verses on the screen today for you. So let me kind of set up what we're going to be reading. This was back during the time when the church was first getting started, not the Verve Church, like the church. Before Jesus left back for heaven, he trained up leaders to lead his movement and to start churches, and they did. And in the beginning of Christianity, Jerusalem became like the first hub of Christianity. The church in Jerusalem had three big-time leaders, Peter, James, and John. But then another big-time leader rises up named Paul. And Paul's mission from God was to bring the gospel. The gospel is the good news about Jesus to the Gentiles. Gentiles are people who were not Jewish. Well, this was different. It was different because back then, all of the Christians were Jewish. They were formerly Jewish and they became Christians. So everybody's like, weird. And so Paul starts traveling around and he starts churches and he brings tons of Gentiles to faith. But there was some tension between Paul and the Jewish Christians back in Jerusalem because, man, Paul's out there sharing our message with Gentiles. But Paul had something good going for him. He had the support of the three big-time leaders, Peter and James and John. They affirmed his mission. In fact, in one of Paul's letters that we have in the Bible called Galatians, he mentions that they made just one request of him. He says, "All they asked was that we should continue to remember the poor, the very thing I was eager to do." And here's what that references to. Back then, the Jewish Christians in Jerusalem were dealing with chronic poverty because there was a large amount of widows in the city, and because there was often food shortages in the city, and because these Jewish Christians in Jerusalem were being ostracized socially and economically because they had left the Jewish faith for Jesus, and so people wouldn't deal with them, they wouldn't shop at their stores, and so they were very poor. So they asked Paul, Peter and James and John, they asked Paul, "Hey, remember the poor," and he took that seriously. In fact, he campaigned for funding for the poor in Jerusalem everywhere he went, all kinds of churches. So that's the background for what we're going to read. We're going to be in 2 Corinthians chapter 8, and we're going to start in verse 1. Paul's writing to the Christians in the city of Corinth. He says, "Now I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what God in his kindness has done through the churches in Macedonia." So Macedonia was and still is a region of Greece. If you're familiar with the Bible, some of the cities in that region include Philippi and Thessalonica and Berea. We'll put a map up. So you see Macedonia is that whole region up there. The city of Corinth is down here. That's who Paul is writing to. Okay, next verse. They are being tested by many troubles. They are the churches, the people in Macedonia, okay? They are being tested by many troubles, and they are very poor, but they are also filled with abundant joy, which has overflowed in rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more. And they did it of their own free will. They begged us again and again for the privilege of sharing in the gift for the believers in Jerusalem. They even did more than we had hoped, for their first action was to give themselves to the Lord and to us, just as God wanted them to do. So we have urged Titus, who encouraged your giving in the first place, to return to you and encourage you to finish this ministry of giving. since you excel in so many ways, in your faith, your gifted speakers, your knowledge, your enthusiasm, and your love from us, I want you to excel also in this gracious act of giving. I am not commanding you to do this, but I am testing how genuine your love is by comparing it with the eagerness of the other churches. So the Corinthian church was probably kind of a lot like us, pretty young, kind of urban, cool, great website, funny video, sexy pastor, kind of like our church in a lot of ways. They were mostly new Christians, and they lived in the city back then that was known for sin. Corinth was like Sin City. And these new believers were struggling to have a biblical worldview instead of just holding on to the non-Christian beliefs that they had been grown up with, you know, they'd always had, and about things like sex and money. Also in their city, there were many false gods who were worshipped, and so they were wrestling with letting go of worshiping those false gods, but they had done it for so long so that they could worship the one true God alone. Okay, so let's just real quick go back through the first few verses. Verse 1, remember it said, "Now I want you to know, dear brothers and sisters, what God in his kindness has done through the churches in Macedonia." So the Christians in the churches in Macedonia were, we read, very persecuted for their faith, and they were very poor. Look at verse 2. "They are being tested by many troubles, and they are very poor, but they are also filled with abundant joy, which has overflowed in rich generosity." So these are new Christians who are being persecuted for their faith. They're very poor. How do they respond? "With abundant joy, which overflowed in rich generosity." Despite their circumstances, they were just a joyful, generous church. Verse 3, "For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more, and they did it of their own free will." And it's so cool to me how generous they were despite their circumstances. And it's even more impressive because they lived in a culture that worshiped money, just like ours, right? The American culture, the Vegas culture, we tend to worship money, right? People can make money their God, meaning they prioritize money above other things. They look to money and having more money for hope, joy, security, comfort, peace. But listen, money is not a good God. It is not reliable. It never does for you what you want it to do. These Corinthian Christians discovered that when they made the choice to make Jesus their God instead of money, even though they were had very little money and they were giving away what they had, when they made Jesus their God, they actually had more hope and joy and security and comfort and peace. Why? Because Jesus is a really good God. And listen, if we, like them, decide to make Jesus our God, well, we can have abundant joy and we can have overflowing generosity, even in the midst of troubles and poverty. But that will only happen if we make God our God, Jesus our God, not money our God. Here's the problem. Most people today, including most people who go to church, still make money their God, not Jesus. Maybe right now you're like, "Is that me? Like, I don't know if that's me." There's a really easy way to figure out. You just look at what you do with your money. If you don't do what God says to do with your money, then you are making your money God above God, right? If God says to do something with your money and you say, "No, I will not," well, then you make money your God above God. And God says a lot about what we should do with our money in the Bible. The first thing that God says we should do is give generously back to him. That's the first thing. In fact, I said this earlier, but in the Bible, God talks more about money than any other topic. Why? Well, it's because he really cares about what we do with our money. And the reason he cares is because he really cares about our hearts. He knows that money is his biggest competition when it comes to what we worship. Because he wants to see if we will really worship him. In fact, he says in the Bible that money is a test. Money is a test that we have in our lives to see who our God really is. The sad part, I would say the scary part, is how many people are picking money over God. This guy named Christian Smith, he's one of the leading sociologists in America, PhD from Harvard. He's a professor at Notre Dame University. He did one of the biggest studies ever on Christian giving for a book he put out called Passing the Plate. Passing the Plate is what most churches do when they take an offering. We don't do that. But here's what he found about the giving of American Christians. He says, we'll put it on the screen, all of the evidence we will see points to the same conclusion when it comes to sharing their money. Most contemporary American Christians are remarkably ungenerous. The goal of this book is not to morally chide or condemn American Christians for their tight-fistedness. We do not need to do that. The numbers speak for themselves. And he writes, Americans, curiously, do not often view themselves as living in abundance. Most Americans, even the upper middle class, often see themselves as just getting by. So here's the truth. If you are lower middle class in America, even if you are poor in America, you are rich. Like when God looks at the world, you're the people. We're the people who he says they're the rich ones. You make way, way more than almost everyone in the world. For instance, over 50% of the world lives off of less than $2 a day. How about this? Do you own a car? If you own one car, you are in the richest 5% of the world because 95% of the world cannot afford a car. If you own more than one car, when Jesus says, from everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked. He's talking to us. And that's sobering. Like he thinks we're the ones who have been entrusted with much. When God says this in the Bible, command those who are rich in this present world to be generous and willing to share. That's us. He's talking to us. We're the rich people in this present world. Here's a few more quotes from Christian Smith in that book. He says, earning higher incomes does not make American Christians more generous with their money. It actually appears to make them more stingy, protective, and distrustful. He writes, the wealthiest national body of Christian believers at any time in all of church history, he's talking about Americans today, end up spending most of their money on themselves. Those are the facts about us. Hey, man, hearing that, it's like, man, the American church today needs a Paul who will like rally the church and give some motivation towards being more generous. And so what is it that makes a church more generous? We're going to look at one or two other reasons the next week or so. But today I want to look at the first reason, that the first motivation that Paul gives to the Corinthians, which is the example of other churches, right? He uses the example of the Macedonian churches to inspire the Corinthian church to give more. We saw in those first few verses, he talks about they were poor, but they begged us to be able to give more and more. And then he concludes in verse 8 like this. He says, I am not commanding you, but I want to test the sincerity of your love by comparing it with the earnestness of others. And so what he's saying is, man, this is about your hearts. And what I want to see is if your love is real. I want to see if you really love God and love people. And the way I will determine that is whether you give generously. He says, if you don't give generously, your love is not sincere. So I'm going to compare your giving to the giving of the Macedonian churches. I'm gonna be totally honest with you. Like, that surprises me. Like, reading that, I'm like, huh, that is not the motivation I would expect him to give is, hey, let's look at the example of other churches. But at the same time, I get it. But because when you see someone else do something that you should be doing, it is motivating, right? It kind of helps you to go, man, people really do live that way. And like, that's kind of the standard. And I'm not there. And it motivates you to do better. His motivation is the example of other churches. So there's a church in Akron, Ohio called River Tree Christian Church. Their pastor, Greg, is a friend of mine. It's a big church, about 3,000 people. At one point, they looked at their giving, and they discovered that about 600 people who considered River Tree their home church, they went there consistently, had given $0 the previous year. So one Sunday, Greg got up in his sermon like this, and he thanked those who were faithfully giving to God and supporting the mission of their church. But then he said, hey, we've discovered that about 600 of you have given nothing in the last year. And he said how sad that made him. Why? Because God says, if you love him, you will give to him. God says, if you love people, you will give to him. God says, if you are a follower of Jesus, one of the central things that you do is give. He explained how the Bible teaches that we should give 10% of our income back to God. But then he told his church, he said, listen, if you're unwilling to do that, don't let the 10% number stop you from giving something. Give something. He encouraged people to at least take one step forward that year in their generosity. He said, God teaches us to give consistently a percentage of our income. So you give a certain amount and you give it consistently, not sporadically or randomly. So he said to his church, he said, at least choose some amount, whatever amount it is, and just give that amount consistently this year. He wasn't harsh about it. He didn't, say, you can't come here if you don't do this or anything like that. And he wasn't referring to people who had no income, but he challenged them. The cool thing is, like, they stepped up to the challenge. People realized, man, really, I worship money, not God. And so they accepted the challenge and they started giving more generously. And the last few years, instead of just barely being able to pay their bills, River Tree Community Church has actually been able to give away to charities and organizations outside their church $1 million a year, every year. They became a truly generous church. There's another church. It's in Long Island. It's called True North Community Church. Back in 2008, they were a pretty new church like us. They were meeting in a small meeting space, small room like us. They were doing four services a weekend like us. And they were about to start a fifth service. Their pastor, a guy named Bert Crabb, he told the church, we can't do any more services after this. Like, we're maxed out. And he said, unless God drops a couple of $1 million on us, what we're going to have to do next is rent a facility that's going to be less than ideal, but at least will allow us to grow a little more. About 4 weeks later, he gets a phone call. This couple says, hey, could you come over? We need to talk to you. Goes over, sits down in their living room. They hand him an envelope. He opens it, and it contains a winning scratch-off lottery ticket for $3 million. And they tell him, hey, we were there a couple of weeks ago when you talked about needing new space for the church to meet, and we won this, but we don't need this money. And we've seen all the stories of how winning the lottery ruins people's lives. We don't need that. And we also don't need credit. Please, we don't want anyone to know that we did this. It's the first time in the history of the New York Lotto that a nonprofit turned in the winning lottery ticket. It became national news. You may have heard about it. It was featured on Good Morning America. They interviewed the pastor, Bert Crabb, and the lady interviewing him asked, she said, Pastor, be honest. If you would have won the lotto, would you have given all of the money to the church? He said, heck no. He said, my wife would have killed me if I gave all the money to the church. So starting in 2008, True North Community Church is now receiving about $150,000 a year, every year for 20 years. You want to hear something really cool? Their first payment that they received, they donated all of it to a charity called Love 146 that works to abolish human trafficking in Southeast Asia. It's like they were blessed and they became a blessing. They moved towards being a generous church. There's another church, it's called Cornerstone. It's in Simi Valley, California. Their people have become so generous that they are able to pay all of their expenses with 49% of their income, and they give away 51% of their offering to other charities and organizations. Man, I hear stories like that, and it fires me up. I'm like, let's go. Like, let's do this. Like, let's become generous like that. And so I guess Paul was right. It does work. I love what the Bible says in Hebrews 10:24. It says, let us think of ways to motivate one another to acts of love and good works. It's like the example of others motivates you to do acts of love. My favorite philosopher. And just by the way, nerd alert. When someone starts a sentence with my favorite philosopher, that is not a guy you want to party with, okay? I'm just saying. But my favorite philosopher, Soren Kierkegaard, and he's also a follower of Jesus. And I love this quote. He says, love is the works of love. Love is the works of love. And what he means is, love is not just something that you feel. It's not just something that you say. Love is something that you do, right? Jesus told us that the most important thing for each of us is to love God and love people. That is the purpose of your life. You don't have to ever wonder again, why do I exist? What's my purpose? It's to love God and love people. And loving God and loving people is not just something that you feel. It's not something just that you say, it's something that you do. Right? Jesus said again, Matthew 6:21, he said, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And he's saying, if you really love God, you're gonna put your money there. If you really love people, you're gonna put your money there. You cannot separate your heart from your wallet. You just can't. And so the question I have to struggle with, the question I would encourage you to struggle with is, what do I really worship? Is it money? Or is it God? There's this one time in the Bible, we see this scene where Jesus is at a church service, just like this one, and he's watching everyone worship, which is fascinating to me. Like Jesus watches what we do when we sit here in church, and lots of people were worshiping with big, like dramatic demonstrations that everyone could see. But then there's this widow, and all the money she has in the world is two coins, like two nickels. And she goes up to the offering, and very quietly, so no one notices, she puts in her last two coins. Jesus is standing over and he sees that and he elbows his friends and he says, that is what I'm looking for. That is real worship. And the question is, what do we really worship? Do we worship money or do we worship God? We could ask it like this. Do you worship money or do you worship God with your money? Right? Or we could say it like this. If we truly worship God, then we go from loving things and using people to loving people and using things. We consider our money to be a tool through which we can love God and love the world. I'll tell you this, more than anything, I want Verve to be a church full of people who are growing in their love for God and their love for others. And if that's true, we will be a generous church. But God would say, you cannot really love without being generous. And Verve is a generous church. We are. I think we're kind of like the Macedonian churches in that way. So for instance, we have given the teachers and the kids at Dean Peterson Elementary Christmas presents, school supplies. We've made all kinds of donations to Marble Manor, the impoverished housing project we adopted. Ververs support about 80 impoverished children through Compassion International in Ecuador. The first part of our offerings every single week go towards starting new churches in America. In fact, in our 8 years of existence, we have given over $120,000 to starting new churches in America. We were also a big part of starting a church in Poland. We gave $25,000 to that. We were a big part of starting a church in Ecuador. We gave $25,000 towards that. It's not just a church. It's a Compassion International project. Kids there are eating and they're learning because of us. And we've started 4 churches in India. We gave $35,000 towards that. And each of those churches has a mission of rescuing women and especially little girls out of sex slavery. We've rescued tons of girls through our generosity. In fact, you remember that that big church who my friend, pastor friend said, man, you should ask us to consider you as a foreign mission. And two of the leaders came and they looked at us and they looked at everything and they're all saying like, yes, they are more like a foreign mission. And if they said yes, they were going to give us $50,000 a year forever, which, man, would be huge. So remember the guy called me and he said, hey, everything looks great. We just have one question. He then said, we've looked at all of your financials and there's an issue here. I said, there is? He said, yeah, like looking at this, you give money to start new churches in America. I said, yeah. He said, and you gave $25,000 to start a new church in Poland. I said, yeah. He said, and you gave $25,000 to start a new church in Ecuador. I said, yeah, not just a church. There's all these kids. He said, and you gave $35,000 to start churches in India. I said, yeah, but it's not just churches. It's churches, and we're rescuing girls out of sex slavery. He said, but Vince, your church can't afford to pay you. I said, I know. He said, Vince, churches give money away. Missions do not. He says, we cannot support you as a mission if you're going to be giving money away. We want to support you. Everyone agrees. But we're afraid that you're going to give the money we give to you away to start other churches and to help more children and rescue more women. He said, that's all good stuff. Don't get me wrong. It's just not something that you can afford to do. He said, we've looked at the numbers. You're a poor church. If you keep doing this, we don't know how you're going to continue. Like, you might need to just shut down. And if you're going to keep doing this, we cannot support you. But we will support you if you stop giving money away and you take a salary. I said, okay, then I guess you can't support us. I think 2 days later, I got a phone call from one of the leaders who had come into town to look at us and everything, and he was so mad. He was so mad at this committee from his church that made this decision. He said, I cannot believe that they are punishing you guys for being generous. It's like, yeah. He said, what do they expect, that you're going to only care about your own people and your own church? I said, yeah. He said, don't they know that you have to set an example of generosity for your church? Yeah. He was like, I mean, you have helped hundreds of people in Ecuador and Poland and India to know Jesus and go to heaven. Yeah. He said, dozens of kids get to eat every day because of your generosity in Ecuador. Yeah. And women and little girls are being rescued out of sex slavery because of Verve. Yeah. And they don't think you should give your money away. Like he said, I'll tell you this. I am so glad that our committee wasn't standing next to Jesus when the widow gave her last 2 coins, because they would have went over and told that widow that she was being dumb. I said, yeah. And then it was just quiet for like a minute. And he said, Vince? I said, yeah. He said, what are you thinking? What are you thinking right now? Me? What am I thinking? They are being tested by many troubles, and they are very poor, but they are also filled with abundant joy, which has overflowed in rich generosity. For I can testify that they gave not only what they could afford, but far more. And they did it of their own free will. Let's pray. God, I feel like maybe the first thing I need to do is to apologize to you and to everyone, because you talk about money and about giving and generosity all the time in the Bible, and we have not talked about money in 3 years. In fact, the only thing we typically say about money every week is, please don't feel like you have to give. And you tell us that if we love, we have to give. That's what love does. And we don't want to turn off people who feel like churches talk too much about money, so we rarely talk about it. But God, we want to be people who grow in our love for you and our love for others. And we can't love without giving. And so would you help us, God, to love more, not just in the way we feel, the words we say, but in what we actually do. Would you help us to become even more of a generous church? God, would you help each of us to take a step forward in our generosity? For some of us, that might be picking a number and giving it consistently for the first time like you've told us to. For others, maybe we've been doing that, but it's time to take another step forward. Thanks for the example of other churches and their generosity, God. Help us to be that kind of church. And I pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.